Hello and welcome to episode 19 of the MisesUK.org podcast, as sponsored by Finlingo.com. Tonight I'll be speaking with Ryan McMakin, who's the editor of both Mises Wire and The Austrian at the Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama. He's also the host of Radio Rothbard, and what a fabulous name for a podcast and one I wish I'd thought of. We'll be speaking about trade wars, trade tariffs and other such crazy matters, particularly in regard to the recent rumblings coming out of the President Donald Trump's White House about such matters. Good evening, Ryan.
Hello, it's great to be with you.
I'm in Henley-on-Thames in England. Which part of the world are you in tonight?
I'm in Denver, Colorado, so right in the middle of North America.
It's been quite cold here recently and snowy and wet and horrible, but it's brightened up in the last 24 hours. What's the weather like where you are?
It's dry as usual and sunny today. It's been a low snow winter, so very different from the east coast of the U.S.
Yeah, well, we've had this coldest winter on record almost, haven't we? So all the poor global warming people are up in arms about that. Now, let's get down to business. A lot of libertarians, even some hardcore Rothbardians, are in some way supporters of Donald Trump. And some have even called him the most libertarian president in at least recent American history. Now, do you think they might be revising this opinion with all this talk of trade tariffs and trade wars?
Well, I mean, calling someone the most libertarian president in recent history isn't exactly great. That doesn't tell us much about the person. And so maybe he is, even if you take the tariffs thing into account. I mean, he has been good on a few things like business regulations and certain types of taxes. But when we look at tariffs, a tariff increase is a tax increase. So, yep, he cut taxes in one place, and now he wants to increase taxes in another. And so I'm not sure how, if you're supporting tax increases, that makes you particularly libertarian. So, yes, that should give one pause if they're going to start throwing around the title libertarian or free market at someone like Donald Trump.
I suppose they might be thinking of Ronald Reagan. That might be the kind of closest comparison. Now, I get confused when I look at American politics and so on, and all I can see from Donald Trump is tweets and so on. You're closer to the scene. Can you decipher for our listeners what this trade war plan is actually going to look like?
Well, so far he hasn't really put out much in terms of details. I mean, most of it was just this promise he made to some industry people about he was going to slap these tariffs on it, and he's been talking a little bit about with his cabinet about it. But I mean, let's just say, okay, it's going to slap these new tariffs on steel and aluminum, and that's going to raise the prices of those goods then for Americans, and then they're going to have to enforce it, right? You're going to have to use a federal bureaucracy to enforce that. It's going to drive up prices for houses, for office buildings, for automobiles, all of that. And it's going to impact Americans. I mean, that's the thing that we need to really drive home, is that this isn't something where, oh, we're just against sticking it to the Chinese or whatever, we have no patriotism. This is a matter of raising taxes on Americans. And however it's implemented exactly, anything that ends up raising the cost of purchasing these goods from wherever, it's a tax. It's an added tax.
Now, do you think there could be some hidden incentives behind this, behind more than just pure tax? Is he just economically illiterate and actually thinks trade wars are good? Or is it just a tax thing and to gain political support from what we might call the blue-collar grassroots?
Well, certainly the political considerations might make sense from his point of view. So if he considers his base to be people who think that the economy can be improved, if you can use protectionism to create more jobs in the U.S., then, and even if he doesn't believe it, if his followers believe it, then it's a good political move.
Now, of course, we'd probably agree that a good trading treaty should just be one page with something like the U.S. Constitution's no tax or duty shall be laid on articles exported from any states. We don't have trading barriers between counties in England or cantons in Switzerland or individual states in America. And even, I suppose, even the dreaded enemy, the Keynesians, would believe in deadweight losses. And even they might believe in free trade. We've also got this great Albert J. Nock quote, which is the primary reason for a tariff is that it enables the exploitation of the domestic consumer by a process indistinguishable from sheer robbery. So even given these blue-collar people sort of saying, yeah, yeah, let's stick it to the Chinese, why do governments keep getting away with trade wars?
Well, I think a lot of it just comes down to the cultural barriers are one issue because, to go back to your point, yeah, I've explicitly said I think the U.S. Constitution should be, in fact, one page. It's a defense union and a customs union, and that's it. Nothing else is necessary. And of course, that all Americans agree, oh, yeah, free trade among the states is a good thing. And Rothbard looked at this and thought about it in terms of a reductio ad absurdum, which was, okay, well, if the principle of more localized, if protections on more localized economic production are a good thing, then why shouldn't it be a good thing then to protect, say, your Illinois, to protect yourself then from goods produced in Ohio? So you're in Chicago, why shouldn't you be complaining about those Ohioans who keep undercutting the wages of honest Illinois workers? And so all of these companies keep moving across the border to Ohio, and it's destroying our Illinois economy. And you can apply those arguments to state-to-state trade, and it's exactly the same. There is no difference in the economic argument at all. So if the question is, well, how come people don't see a benefit there of using tariffs to screw over people in Pennsylvania when you're in Maryland, but how come it makes sense then to apply them to the Chinese and protect Americans from Chinese? And even though it doesn't actually protect us from them, all it does is raise our cost of living, all I can think is that there's a cultural issue there, is that, oh, they're getting something they don't deserve because they're far away and we don't know these people and we'll never live in China, right? And whereas I might live in Ohio if I live in Illinois currently. So I just see this as a place where I benefit also from them benefiting from trade with us. And so I think there is a mental block there that doesn't apply. And so that's, of course, beyond the scope of economics, is people see that and they think, oh, well, we can punish these people somehow. And then they support that. But of course, there's no economic argument there at all.
Yeah, we can punish these people by paying more for our automobiles and allowing the continuance of uneconomic steel plants and so on. Moving on to the Chinese. Now, we did see this one illiterate Trump tweet, which said something like, when we're down $100 billion with a certain country, and I'm sure he meant China, and they get cute, we don't trade anymore. We win big. It's easy. I love the English, by the way. Now, what he doesn't seem to understand is that the US... to do this $100 billion deficit with China, they've just been printing US Treasury bills. They've shipped them to China electronically, the $100 billion, and then they ship back from China all these goods. Now, to misquote Herbert Stein, this is something that cannot go on forever, so it will stop. And the way to resist it is not through trade barriers, but through production. So we've lost Gary Cohn, the economics advisor to Trump in the White House. Are we just seeing the idiotization of Trump's administration, or is something really clever going on that I'm not aware of?
Well, I don't subscribe to the four-dimensional chess theory of Trump that he's always one step ahead of everybody else, and we're too stupid to crack his ingenious strategy. But I don't think he's necessarily any stupider than anybody either. Looking at the policy, he is pretty good so far at political moves, and so he could be, again, back to the issue of shoring up his base. And recognizing that it's going to be very hard to point to his policy and say, oh, look, here's this amount of money that the Trump administration cost us. Now, in the other direction, people can say, oh, look how we benefited from these policies. Now, back in college, on the matter of interest groups and pressure groups as a subfield, right, in political science and so on, one of the first things you always understood was this asymmetry of benefits, right? So people who benefit from steel tariffs directly and who benefit a lot from it are going to hire lobbyists, and they're going to take action to point out how they're going to benefit and that the president should take action to protect them. Now, the general public on a per capita basis is going to pay in a negative way a much smaller amount than the steel industry people will benefit on a per capita basis. So they're much more motivated than to take action and get what they want through this. And whereas the general people, they're going to look at their budget and they say, well, I can't see anywhere in here how I've suffered from steel tariffs. And even if they buy an apartment somewhere in a building made from partly steel or a car and the prices go up slightly, well, can you say for sure that that was due to the tariffs and not due to some other inflationary issue? And that's hard to say. So it's just back again to this issue of the scene here. Is the steel producer say, oh, look, we hired this many people jobs, or we didn't have to lay off this many people because of the tariffs. And then meanwhile, all the unseen are the little bits of money that, say, an entrepreneur has to pay to maintain his business. Now, and even then, with a small increase, those marginal issues do matter. If you're a small businessman and you have a fleet of trucks, you know, 5 or 6 trucks, 12 trucks, whatever, to do your business, well, that's just that small increase can substantially impact your profit margins and maybe lead to you laying people off. But by the time you go through all that analysis, how much are you going to be able to blame on steel tariffs? So it's just from a political standpoint, extremely hard to 5 years down the line point to this and say, hey, look, Trump ruined my business with a steel tariff.
Yeah, I read something, I think it was on the Mises Wire, actually, so thank you for publishing it, that I think one U.S. steel company spent $20 million on kind of glad-handing senators in Congress. And for that, they've got this $9 billion proposed tariff. So that was a really good investment on their part, but has created an enormous deadweight loss of $9 billion minus $20 million for everyone else, putting on $100, $200 on the price of a car. And of course, when these little entrepreneurs make goods, those goods are now going to cost more. So when they try to export them, they're going to suffer because their prices have to be high. Now, you mentioned there the seen and the unseen coming from Bastiat, which is one of my favorite French philosophers. Now, it might have been Otto Malory, but it might have been Frederick Bastiat. But one of those two said, if goods don't cross borders, then soldiers will. With Trump coming up with other tweets, such as trade wars are good and easy to win, what could be the economic consequences of increasingly hostile trade wars?
Well, yes, that's always a bad thing. And it also goes into the issue of immigration as well. So in terms of foreign policy and immigration, free trade's always a good thing for smoothing things over. I mean, if you're against lots of immigrants crossing the border, you should totally be for free trade, because that helps build up both of your economies, but it also builds up the economies of those countries you're trading with, and creates less of an incentive for the residents there to want to leave there. And so it's really weird that we have people who are both anti-immigration and anti-free trade, whereas free trade, it holds many of the solutions to any immigration problems you perceive. So there's that issue. And then there's just the relations in terms of foreign policy in general, as if you have good trading relations with countries, you're much less likely to get into hostilities. And once, if you get into a war, which is a significant trading partner, you're going to significantly cut the standard of living of the people within your own country, because now they'll no longer have access to those goods and services outside their border. And so the two are all those three issues, free trade, foreign policy, and immigration are all very much interlinked, and they have benefits in terms of peace as well. And so it's not a mistake that the U.S. has a habit of invading countries that have very little trade with the U.S. And why it's unlikely that there's going to be any outright hostilities with China, simply because the U.S. standard of living would be massively impacted if there was a real war there that cut off goods and services. I mean, the cost of living for Americans would skyrocket, and it would be a very big problem for the standard of living here. And so it's a good thing then that there's at least some trade there as well. And so if you're going to enter into a bunch of tough talk on foreign policy while at the same time erecting trade barriers, yeah, that's not really great for the future of peace.
Yeah, it seems strange for a country as well like the United States, which became massively powerful and wealthy because of the founding fathers' policies of not entangling themselves in trade wars and so on, and trading with everybody. Now, Ryan, I'm going to do something terrible to you. You might not like it. I'm going to make you the 46th president of the United States. So you have to manage all of that fantastic opportunity. Now, I'm going to give you a choice. You want to save $100 billion from the poor oppressed taxpayer. And you can either save $100 billion from cutting income tax, or you can save $100 billion from cutting tariffs on goods which are being imported into the US. You can only do one of those two things. So which would you cut? Would you cut income taxes or would you cut tariffs? Which one is worse? Which one is the best one to cut of the two? And why is one better or worse than the other?
That's an excellent question. And I do have an answer. I'm not going to try to weasel out of it.
Great.
I don't think there's an economic answer to that question. I think the only answer lies in American history and American federalism. So I do think the answer is you cut the income tax in this case. The income tax has been very destructive of American federalism because it gives the federal government first dibs on everyone's income. And if states and cities and localities wish to obtain more independence and autonomy from the central government, well, their hands are tied because the government already has its hands in every American citizen's pocket through the income tax. And so, yeah, in a certain way, then the tariff is not as intrusive in that way. And so, yes, if I had to choose one, I would choose the income tax. One point to make about the tariff, however, is that a tariff properly understood in 19th century America was a revenue tariff. So, yep, we'll freely admit 19th century Americans saw the tariff as the proper source of revenue for the federal government, did not consider all tariffs to be bad. However, they did maintain that the proper role of the tariff was revenue and not protectionism. So there were debates over at what point does a tariff go from being a revenue tariff to a protectionist tariff? So there was a constant tension then where the idea was, okay, the tariff is acceptable, but only to the point where it provides the revenue you need. Using tariffs to punish foreign regimes or to protect local goods was another matter and a separate issue and much more debatable than the issue of tariffs overall.
Crikey, we could spill into the war of northern aggression against the southern United States there, couldn't we?
Yes.
We could even get into the English Civil War, which was a matter of King Charles and tariffs on various cities in the middle of England, which hadn't been used to paying the ship tax, which was a sort of an early tariff as well. But we haven't got time to get into the English Civil War or the American Civil War, but we have got time for one last cheeky question. Have you got any events or books or anything going on at the Mises Institute that you'd like to mention before we go? And I was thinking particularly of Radio Rothbard.
Well, I've got to get back on. I got to do a couple more Radio Rothbards for this week. So far, it's been all like guns and crime articles, but that's not necessarily the theme of it. That just happened to be the news cycle here recently. But I think what's coming up is more articles that we'll be doing about government spending. And right, the most recent one that we'll all be doing for Radio Rothbard is the issue of there's this idea that America has no welfare state. And that it's this pure free market thing where there's no safety net, which is completely untrue. So I think we'll be looking more and more at just how much the U.S. spends on these social benefits. Whether you think it's good or bad, we should at least be aware of how much it's happening. But at least in terms of events coming up, we got, of course, several events. You should just go to the events page at Mises.org. Uh-huh. And we've got two or three already scheduled in terms of these Mises circles throughout North America. We've got our Austrian Economics Research Conference coming up later this month. And then this summer, we've got Mises University, mostly for undergraduate students, but not necessarily. I would encourage any students listening to you, whether they're from North America or not, to apply for that and consider joining other students in Auburn this July.
Excellent. Now, I can recommend Radio Rothbard. The articles are nice and short, which I like. Thank you for your time tonight, Ryan McMakin.
Thank you, Andy.
We hope you enjoyed tonight's programme. I'd particularly like to thank Natalie Fawn Danny Lishan for her help in setting up tonight's show. If you'd like to help us out here at Mises UK, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or even a fantastic review. And if you'd like to spread the links to this podcast onto your favourite social media sites, then you'll definitely gain extra angel points when you face St. Peter at the pearly gates of almighty heaven. We'll be back soon with some other great guests from the fabulous world of Austrian economics, and maybe even some other areas too. In the meantime, please enjoy your property and freedom responsibly.